good evening. The entire country in New York sues Facebook. The Supreme Court rules against Trump. Biden's corporate cabinet picks. Israel's nukes. The trouble with ranked choice voting. And Mexico stands up to the United States. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. Facebook could be forced to sell WhatsApp and Instagram after the Federal Trade Commission and nearly every state filed lawsuits against the social media company, saying the deals were unfair and ultimately harmed consumers. It's the second big tech company to face an antitrust action since the Department of Justice sued Google's parent company, Alphabet, Incorporated, in October. State Attorney General Letitia James announced New York would be one of the 46 states, the District of Columbia and Guam, seeking an injunction that could mean a breakup of Facebook.
Facebook bought Instagram for $1 billion in 2012, when the company did not even have a cent in revenue. And in 2014, Facebook paid the extravagant amount of $19 billion for WhatsApp, which was far more than industry experts and even Facebook itself valued the company. The second and just as harmful anti-competitive strategy Facebook utilized was suffocating and squashing third-party developers that were invited to utilize Facebook's platform. Facebook would try to squeeze every bit of oxygen out of the room for smaller companies that refused to be bought. Facebook used an open first, close later strategy to stop competitive threats, where it would first open its platform to apps created by third-party developers. This increased functionality on the site and subsequently increased the number of users on Facebook. And then Facebook abruptly cut off apps it viewed as a competitive threat.
Attorney General James added Facebook had followed a buy or bury strategy to eliminate potential competition while suffocating third-party developers.
It goes on to speak to their efforts to suppress innovation, to cut privacy protections, to monetize data, which is how they make money, to reduce investments. If you look at the complaint, it degrades the quality of a user's experience on Facebook. And for advertisers, they are subjected and have been subjected to higher prices and to less transparency. And last but not least, it neutralizes small businesses. So it's important that consumers understand a significant number of consumers and users are totally unaware that Facebook owns WhatsApp as well as Instagram. And again, because they represented a competition to these companies.
And that's Letitia James, the Attorney General of the State of New York. Facebook's chief executive, Mark Zuckerberg, told employees in July the company would go to the mat to fight a breakup of the company. Audio of internal company meetings published by The Verge called it an existential threat.
It's just that breaking up these companies, whether it's Facebook or Google or Amazon, is not actually going to solve the issues. And, you know, it doesn't make election interference less likely, it makes it more likely, because now the companies can't coordinate and work together.
The company said the government now wants to do a do-over with no regard for the impact that president would have on the broader business community or the people who choose our products every day. On Tuesday, the United States Supreme Court refused to overturn the certification of Joe Biden's win in Pennsylvania. The governor had already certified Biden's victory. The state's 20 electors meet next week to cast their votes for the former vice president. Trump followed the loss by immediately jumping into another improbable case today, a suit brought by the Texas governor demanding the votes in Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin be invalidated. Outside the court, pro-Trump demonstrators said they were praying for a favorable decision.
And we are here to pray for all those.
The people of Pennsylvania and Congressman Mike Kelly deserve to be listened to. Please not only hear our cries, but uphold the law and uphold our Constitution, because we will not be a nation, we will not be a republic, if we give in to the people who steal.
That's right.
Biden beat the president in Pennsylvania by 80,000 votes, a state Trump won in 2016. In other news from our nation's capital, retired General Lloyd Austin, the first African-American in the job, was introduced as Joe Biden's nominee to head the Department of Defense. A soldier for four decades, combat soldier in America's Middle East wars, retiring to take a position on the board of defense contractor Raytheon, Austin says as secretary he will respect civilian control of the military.
And so I come to this role, this new role, as a civilian leader, with military experience to be sure, but also with a deep appreciation and reverence for the prevailing wisdom of civilian control of our military.
Biden made public two other key domestic policy picks today, electing Ohio Representative Marsha Fudge as his Housing and Urban Development Secretary and bringing back Tom Vilsack, President Obama's Agriculture Secretary. Fudge is a former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. Vilsack has worked representing the dairy industry. Food activists say Vilsack was the wrong choice. The policy director of Food and Water Watch is Mitch Jones. He says Biden did make the wrong choice.
Food and Water Watch actually supported Congresswoman Marsha Fudge for this position. She is an expert on issues of nutrition and hunger, and we believe that having somebody with that background at the helm of USDA would actually help alleviate the food crisis that we're entering, where so many Americans are having to rely on food banks for food because of the COVID pandemic and the economic crisis that has accompanied it. With Vilsack, we don't believe that his focus is going to be on helping to prevent hunger, on helping people get food, so much as it's going to be on continuing his longtime dedication to the ag industry at the expense of not only family farmers, but of all Americans who eat.
Would this have anything to do with the China policy, the fact that they've been giving subsidies to farmers who were hit hard by the Trump administration's trade war? Yeah, the trade war.
Ironically, for the first time in well over a decade, farm income was in the positive this past year. It was only a few hundred dollars in the positive, but it was in the positive precisely because of the government support being given as a result of Trump's trade war with China. You know, we've heard that Biden has indicated he's not going to immediately back off from Trump's China tariffs. We don't know if that's going to be writ large or if it's going to be a smaller amount, but definitely the Secretary of Agriculture will have an important role to play, because if there continues to be this trade war with China, then on top of all of the other challenges that American farmers face, they will continue to suffer from the fact that the trade that they've had with China is not the same as it was, and the prices that they're receiving are not as high as they were.
During the campaign, you heard farmers who said, this is great, these payments that Trump is making to compensate for the tariffs are the first profit, cash profit I made in a long time.
Right.
You got a lot of votes in Iowa on that.
Yeah, it's true. It is the first profit that a lot of farmers have seen from their farm income for a long time. But I think given the choice between having their profit come from checks from the federal government or from being able to sell their product at good prices, the majority of farmers would choose being able to sell their product at good prices.
Why wouldn't Vilsack be a good choice in that context?
Because the decrease in farm income is really correlated with the increase in concentration within the agriculture sector. So as fewer and fewer businesses control larger and larger portions of the agriculture sector, profits are driven to corporate boardrooms, to shareholders, to Wall Street, instead of being kept in local communities where family farmers circulate that money to local businesses. We're facing hunger not because we're not producing enough food, but because of our inability to get it to the people who need it most. And this has been true throughout the year during the pandemic. The industry has tried to use the threat of food shortages to reduce regulation on themselves. But we found that they've actually been increasing exports of food to China and elsewhere at the same time, and also that there had been an increase of food being kept in cold storage.
Mitch Jones is policy director of Food and Water Watch. When Tom Vilsack was at the U.S. Dairy Export Council, he earned $1 million as its top executive. Vilsack was also a major booster of the controversial Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. Meanwhile, the United States Senate will vote on resolutions of disapproval Wednesday condemning the Trump administration's planned sale of more than $23 billion in military equipment to the United Arab Emirates, New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez.
Whereas a sale of this scope would normally merit months and months of detailed deliberations between the Departments of Defense and State, this sale was announced with more missing than a few dotted I's and crossed T's. The bottom line is that there are many outstanding issues critical to U.S. national security that have not been addressed, including, by way of example, the United Arab Emirates' present and future military relationships with Russia and China.
Senator Bob Menendez, human rights group Amnesty International has criticized the United States' sale of drones and other weapons to the United Arab Emirates, saying they will be used in the conflict in Yemen. The Emirates recently signed a peace agreement with Israel, brokered by Trump. And the United Nations General Assembly called on Israel to renounce possession of nuclear weapons in a 153-6 vote on Monday with 25 abstentions. Israel is presumed to be one of the world's nine nuclear powers, but it's never admitted to the possession of nuclear weapons. The head of the Nuclear Information Project at the Federation of American Scientists is Hans Christensen. He says denying possessing the weapons is Israel's little game.
It's a very hot potato in the Middle East, of course, and they've always had this policy that they did not want to be the first to introduce nuclear weapons in the Middle East. That was their policy. And even though they have a sizable arsenal, I don't think it's more than 100. But the point is more, they don't want to confirm that. It also is because the Israeli arsenal is not fully assembled under normal circumstances, so it's thought. They would have to assemble the warheads. It can be done quickly, but they have to assemble the warheads before they could be used. And so technically, they're sort of saying, well, therefore, we haven't really introduced nuclear weapons because they're not assembled. So it's kind of like a game they've been playing for years.
Hans Christensen is head of the Nuclear Information Project at the Federation of American Scientists. The Palestinian Authority was among the sponsors of the non-proliferation resolution, as were Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Oman, and the United Arab Emirates. You're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced today the federal government has agreed to not collect identifiable information from undocumented individuals as part of the federal vaccination distribution program. The agreement came at the urging of Cuomo, backed by 52 organizations. The federal government has required states to provide identification data that could be shared with immigration agencies, possibly dissuading undocumented immigrants from taking the vaccine. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was also demanding a name and unique ID for vaccine recipients, including Social Security, passport, or driver's license numbers. And six city council members and nearly a dozen community groups have filed a lawsuit seeking to halt the rollout of ranked choice voting in next year's city elections. Approved by voters in a sparsely attended primary election, ranked choice voting is to be put to its first test in New York City at a February 2nd city council special election. It's a system of voting where voters rank their preferences and a computer figures out who won. Kirsten John Foy, president of the activism group Arc of Justice, says he's considering a suit against the voting method with the NAACP.
We're actively exploring our legal options, a federal lawsuit, asking for a stay on this election. We can appeal to the council, which we are doing, and to the state legislative bodies who have the authority to intervene. The mayor and the governor could both write executive orders. That's the state of affairs. That is our condition right now. We have executive orders that are reshaping our lifestyle. We can have them protect the voting franchise, protect the civil rights of Black and brown and other community, protect their voting rights, while at the same time still implement ranked choice voting at a later election. We're not saying undo the will of the voter. We're saying this is not the time to impose this imposition on black and brown communities.
What's the main problem with it as far as the voter when they come in to vote for the, by this process?
There is no design for the ballot yet. We don't know what the ballot is going to look like. We don't know what a ranked choice ballot is going to look like for an election 2 months from now. So once that determination is made, what the ballot looks like, you then must educate the electorate on how to properly use that ballot, how to properly read it and assess it and understand it. So there is not a sufficient enough time to go from design of the ballot to understanding, reaching a critical mass of voters who understand the new system. Not to mention the fact, if we are moving into the dark winter and are expecting that we will have a continued a push for write-in ballots, how do you expect a voter without the benefit of communicating with a poll worker, who, by the way, have not been properly trained themselves, to be able to properly read and execute the ballot? There are just too many technical deficiencies in the rollout. They're not prepared. They're not trained their own workers. They're not prepared to educate the electorate. They don't even have a ballot yet to point to say this is what it's going to look like. We don't have the mechanics in place to roll out a competent election, ranked choice voting election.
So people who get these ballots might be confused. They might not understand how to work them and what it's all about. And also, this gets confusing for a lot of people, but the winner, the original, the person who wins, who gets the most votes in the first counting, might not necessarily be the person who wins in a ranked choice system.
This is the philosophical disagreement. We talked about the technical deficiencies. This replaces the longstanding principle of one person, one vote with a process as you have rightly stated, decides the election. The framework is now not one man, one vote, but a process where it is possible that a person that does not enjoy the majority of the support or even a great plurality of the support can eventually become the winner of an election. So instead of the direct will of the voter being known and assessed, we now have an algorithm and a process which will select the leadership.
It can't be counted. It has to be run through a computer. Only a computer can do it.
So you're telling me artificial intelligence is now selecting the winners of our election as opposed to the will of the voter? Is it more expensive to have runoff elections? Absolutely. But who said democracy was efficient? Who said democracy was going to be able to be done on the cheap? We know what democracy on the cheap looks like. It looks like the disenfranchisement of communities of color. We cannot, in New York, accept that as our fate, certainly in the framework of COVID, which has upended all of our lives.
Kirsten John Foyes, president of the activism group Arc of Justice. Ranked choice voting has been used in San Francisco and Oakland, California, and in Maine. Its effect on voters isn't clear. Since 2007, the U.S. government has relied on a small group of Mexican officials to implement the Merida Initiative. That's a wide-ranging aid program to fight organized crime and narco trafficking. Now, some of those same individuals are facing trial in the United States on charges of rampant corruption linking them to drug cartels. The Washington, D.C.-based National Security Archive published a trove of documents gotten through the Freedom of Information Act and other sources. A senior analyst with the National Security Archive is Michael Evans. He says the U.S. just couldn't find an honest man.
From the beginning, U.S. policymakers really like to sort of tout the fact that the program emphasized what they called the development of trustworthy institutions. The idea was, you know, if the U.S. was going to provide all of this technology and intelligence to Mexico, that they'd better ensure that the people running those programs in Mexico, from the cops on the beat, all the way up to the sort of senior level officials in the security ministries, weren't corrupt. that had been a big problem in Mexico. It always had been. So this is the story, the reason that we sort of focused on these documents and General Cienfuegos, the Secretary of Defense, former Secretary of Defense, who was arrested and then released. Two other individuals that were high-level security officials that remain in U.S. custody and that are still expected to go to trial. This is the story of how the U.S., despite making this development of trustworthy institutions one of the four pillars, they called them, on which the success of the Merida initiative depended. Despite that, somehow the U.S. ended up steering billions of dollars of security assistance, even more importantly, ultra-sensitive intelligence and law enforcement information, into the hands of individuals who essentially worked for the cartels. For instance, there's a cable from May 2020 where the ambassador at the time, Ambassador Pascual, suggested that, this is a quote, if control de confianza fails — control de confianza is just confidence control, it's like the sort of the vetting procedures that they do — if control de confianza fails, Merida fails. He says, if equipment and training are provided to corrupt individuals, the U.S. will have accomplished nothing more than provide expertise and technology to individuals who may use it to undermine all U.S. efforts in Mexico. He says the bottom line is that if control de confianza fails, Merida fails. Here we are 10 years later, and by those criteria, it seems to have been a failure. Where this case connects with similar cases is through Ivan Reyes Arzate. He was the — many years he led the DEA-backed sensitive investigative unit. It was a DEA-backed unit that was the central clearinghouse for U.S. intelligence and law enforcement information related to countering the cartels. He, along with Genaro Garcia Luna, who was the head of the SSP and is also in U.S. custody, these guys were among the key beneficiaries of Merida-related security assistance for many years, people who were trusted to manage hundreds of millions of dollars worth of military hardware, sensitive information technology, and a steady stream of U.S. intelligence and law enforcement information. And that's where the U.S. angle really comes in. Reporting from a few years ago by ProPublica, a great reporter named Ginger Thompson uncovered the March 2011 Allende massacre case, really one of the bloodiest and most terrible massacres, cartel-related massacres in the history of Mexico. Hundreds of people potentially killed or disappeared in a three-day sweep by the Los Zetas criminal group. That was sparked, as it turns out, by a leak of information from this SIU. SIU is where this guy Reyes Arzate, he was the head of it at that time, and now he's in U.S. custody. But it appears that what happened was the DEA shared information with the SIU about the Zetas, and that information got to the Zetas through the SIU, perhaps through Reyes Arzate. That's not clear. If you sort of stand back and look at connect the dots from a distance, it does seem like that's the implication, that some of these cases that have been directly linked to leaks of U.S. intelligence, U.S. law enforcement information traced right back to this SIU. This guy is still in custody and for years was a trusted member of the Mexican police and who was really at the center of all their intelligence liaison relationships with the U.S.
Michael Evans is a senior analyst with the National Security Archive. In October, the United States arrested the ex-minister of defense of Mexico, Salvador Cienfuegos, accusing him of drug trafficking and money laundering. In an extraordinary break with tradition, the United States agreed to drop drug trafficking charges and released him from U.S. custody. In recent days, Mexico's president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, has moved to severely limit U.S. drug agents' freedom in Mexico. And finally, President-elect Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, revealed Wednesday that he's under investigation for his tax affairs by federal prosecutors in Delaware. Hunter Biden said in a statement, "I learned yesterday for the first time that the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware advised my legal counsel also yesterday that they are investigating my tax affairs. I take this matter very seriously, but I'm confident that a professional and objective review of these matters will demonstrate that I handle my affairs legally and appropriately, including with the benefit of professional tax advisors." Hunter Biden, a lawyer whose late brother Beau Biden was Delaware's attorney general before he died, didn't reveal any other details of the probe. A spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney for Delaware in an email said, per Department of Justice policy, we cannot comment on an ongoing investigation. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. The news is produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.